morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Wednesday. It's August 25th, 52 degrees here in Old Town Park City. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Thomas Guiboy. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie, and happy Wednesday. Halfway to the weekend. So far this week, our weather has been quite nice, but we're going to start to see some changes as we work our way through today, where if you haven't already noticed from yesterday, especially down in Salt Lake City, but we're beginning to see a little bit of smoke on the horizon. We actually saw some of that smoke from the sunrise this morning over in Park City. So we'll be looking at some patchy smoke for today. It's also going to remain with temperatures in the 70s this afternoon. So after a relatively cool start, it's going to be pretty comfortable this afternoon, albeit with the smoke. And because of the smoke, our air quality is taking a little bit of a hit. We're going to be looking at some moderate when it comes to the air quality. Something to keep in mind if anybody's going to be outside for a while. As we go through the afternoon into the evening, with a southwesterly flow continuing with an upper level system coming in from the northwest, a few showers and storms can't be completely ruled out, and we'll be looking at a slight chance for showers as we go through tonight, even into tomorrow as well. But the rain chance not all that high, between 20% and 30%, but that's something to keep in mind maybe if you're going to be going hiking later this afternoon, or if you're planning on being outside tonight into tomorrow, with a slight chance for a few showers and thunderstorms tomorrow. Highs in the lower 70s, and I'm expecting smoke to continue as well, because as that upper level system moves in, winds are going to switch more out of the west, and that might actually transport more of that wildfire smoke over. So we could actually see the air quality take another dip heading into our Thursday. We'll be watching that closely. But for your Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, we're just going to kind of get into a relatively dry pattern with consistent temperatures, with overnight lows into the upper 40s and lower 50s. Daytime highs are mainly going to be in the 70s. And then as we turn the page into early next week, we'll go on a little bit of a warming trend before we bring back a slight chance for showers and thunderstorms into the forecast into next Tuesday.
Okay, thank you. And stay tuned. Coming up during the local news hour this morning, I'll be talking with Leadership Class 25 member and Park City resident David Kotler. He's got details about the class project that the leadership group did 2 years ago, a comprehensive resource guide for Summit County homeowners, especially relevant following the Parley's Canyon fire. And then Swan and Preserve Executive Director Nell Larson and Conservation Coordinator Rhea Cohn in with details on research that's being done on beaver dam analogs as here in Summit County. Well, with the close call of the Parley's Canyon fire now behind us, I thought it would be a good time to remind those living in the urban wildfire areas about a comprehensive resource guide for Summit County homeowners. In the studio with us, I've got one of the Class 25 members of Leadership Park City, David Kotler. Good morning, David. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So, again, thanks for bringing this to our attention. I had really completely forgotten about it. So tell us a little bit about the guide, what it is, and why you guys thought that this was a worthwhile class project.
Well, we all live in an area that's known as the wildland-urban interface. It is an area where the forest is close to residences and businesses, and we are aware of the dangers of wildfire. And so our leadership class was wanting to educate the public about what they can do to minimize the risk of wildfire and minimize the risk of their own home being destroyed or affected by a wildfire. So we did a number of things to educate the public. One of them is this resource guide that we developed. When we started looking around, none of us were experts in the field, and so we started basically from scratch doing our own research, and what we found was there's a lot of information out there, and some of it is a little bit complicated, some of it is a lot of data, and it's scattered around the internet, and so we wanted to compile everything in a simple, pretty brief resource guide that residents of Summit County could use to educate themselves about what to do around their own homes.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, it's just not Summit County. I guess folks in Wasatch County, or really any kind of, like you say, wildland urban fire area could find a lot of benefit from it, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, since the class members aren't fire experts, I mean, who did the fact-checking once you kind of got it all compiled?
The process was it was really driven by the members of the leadership class, but we also collaborated with a number of local fire authority experts, people from the Park City Fire District, Summit County Fire Warden, emergency management people, and several others. And our final product was reviewed by all of them. Fortunately, there weren't a whole lot of changes. It was, I think it turned out pretty good. It's very straightforward and easy to understand, so I want to encourage people to look at it and learn what they can do around their own homes. A lot of these steps that people can take are pretty easy, things that you can do on your own. You don't have to hire anybody to do them for you.
So it's kind of a step-by-step checklist that people can kind of go through? Is that how it works?
Yeah, there's a checklist. Typically, the first step is to assess your own home or have somebody else assess it. Some of the local fire agencies will come out and do a assessment of your home free of charge, look around and tell you what should be done, what can be done, and that's the first step. And then the guide will take you through kind of the rest and really give some good details about what you should do.
Yeah, with lots of pictures too. Yeah, it really makes a difference, I think, you know, kind of the before and afters.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how can the guide be accessed?
The easiest way to find it is just put into Google Summit County Fire Warden, and it will pull up the Fire Warden's webpage, and the resource guide is right there. Just click on the link.
Okay. And does the guide need to be updated, or, I mean, is that something that you guys take on as retirees of the leadership program?
When we finished the project, we actually turned the guide over to the Summit County Fire Warden. That office can update it, make changes if they want. I'm not aware of any changes that they've made. And I think most of the advice in the resource guide is pretty uniform and consistent advice throughout the wildfire prevention arena. So I don't think it's going to need a whole lot of updating other than maybe some of the links that we've included in there.
All right. Now, as somebody who was evacuated during the fire, I mean, had you done all that the guide had recommended that you do?
I would say that I probably have not done all of it, but I've done a lot of it. You know, there's different, I would say, tiers of importance. So you want to start with your house and your defensible space, which is typically referred to as about 5 feet outside the perimeter of your structure. And so I've done all of that. And then the further out you go from your structure, there's some other recommendations. And living in Summit Park, there, you know, we live there partly, largely because of the trees. And so, you know, nobody wants to cut down any trees, but sometimes just to get them a little bit away from your house, so the limbs are not overhanging your roof, things like that, pretty easy, and I've done most of those.
Ah, okay. Does the guide also, because I think for many of you, it was immediate, the evacuation. I mean, you didn't have a lot of time to think about what it is. So does the guide kind of go through some of that process about what's important in the event of an emergency?
Unfortunately, our guide is more preventative than what to do in an evacuation. After being evacuated, I can say that I hope at some point that somebody does develop an evacuation guide. And a number of people that I've talked to who were also evacuated, you know, you don't know what it's like until it happens. And, you know, people are scrambling. What should I grab? How fast should I get out? And, you know, should I turn the gas off at my house? Should I leave the lights on? Should I close the windows? What do I do? And there's a lot of, I think, advice out there in terms of how to properly evacuate. Unfortunately, we did not include that in our guide.
Yeah, and now just kind of you had some distance from that. I mean, it's interesting to kind of hear from people. You know, some, it's just very traumatic. I mean, PTSD, you know, kind of. Others who were out of town, I don't know that they had that same intensity. I mean, what are you kind of hearing from people you know?
It really varies. People that I've talked to have reacted very differently. A lot of strong emotions. People who were convinced that was the last time they would see their house that maybe, you know, they've raised their kids in, they've lived in for years, and it didn't, for me personally, it didn't really strike me until after the whole thing was over, driving through Parley's Canyon and seeing the huge burn scar on the side of the road, and thinking, you know, not so much about my own house, but about the neighborhood as a whole. And that's what it could have looked like.
Yeah. Okay, again, people can go on to the summitcounty.org website. They'll find it there by searching Fire Warden, and, you know, probably worth the few hours that it's going to take to follow through, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, anything else you'd like to mention, David?
No, I think that's it.
All right, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Well, the Swanner Preserve and Eco Center are doing some research on beaver dam analogs and implementing its Park City Community Foundation Climate Fund grant. In the studio with details, I have the executive director of the Swanner Preserve, Nell Larson. She's joined with conservation coordinator Rio Cohn. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So, Nell, why don't you start by telling us what a beaver dam analog is and why they're important to you?
Rhea and I are laughing at each other because we always try to find the best way to answer this question. So beaver dam analogs are essentially man-made beaver dams, and they're designed to kind of mimic the form and the function and the benefits of real natural beaver dams that you would find in the stream ecosystem. And so they're important for a variety of reasons. I think, you know, many people look at a beaver dam in general and think like, oh, it's blocking the stream, it's causing problems, beavers are rodents. But actually those beaver dams are really important to the stream health for things like water quality, water temperature, the nutrient levels, the form of the stream that makes it good habitat for our native fishes, and all kinds of other reasons related to the water quality and the biodiversity.
So you say that, but then there's others that actually come up and, consider them a nuisance and take down the dams.
Yeah, and you know, we know firsthand that beavers can be a nuisance when it comes to your landscaping trees or things like that. They love aspens and cottonwoods, and so where you have them in sort of in proximity to those trees, you'll want to protect the trees a little bit, and Rhea can tell you some great ways to do that. Yeah. If you need that info.
Yeah, but since beavers like to do the work themselves, mm-hmm. Why do we need to build fake ones?
Yeah, that is.
Man-made ones.
Yeah. It's okay. You can call them fake. It's a great question. And the reason is in a lot of areas, the stream has been degraded to a point where it's not really attractive to beavers. Maybe there aren't enough willows or woody vegetation there yet. Maybe there isn't quite enough water or ponding. And when you build these beaver dam analogs, it can sort of encourage, almost incentivize the beavers to maintain them on their own. And in an ideal world, that's what you would see. And actually, at Swanner, we're starting to see some of that.
Okay, so you have built some analogs then on the preserve?
We have, and we started actually back in 2015, and it was really very focused on maintaining stream flow because these beaver dam analogs can help to keep the water in the stream longer, and we see super low levels. And since that time, the project has kind of grown. In 2015, we had to travel around the West to learn about how these structures worked and how to install them, and now they're gaining popularity here. And I'll pass it to Rhea to talk a little bit about what we've actually installed on the Nature Preserve.
Okay. Yeah. So we have about 25 BDAs installed on the preserve in total that have been put in since about 2015. And we've been doing a lot of work over the past 3 years with a USU PhD student named Marshall Wolf and collecting just a lot of data to try to learn as much as we can about the ecological impacts of these structures. So we've been taking all kinds of data from dissolved oxygen and temperature to something called NDVI, which basically measures greenness of an area and like seeing how much primary production or photosynthesis is occurring, like how happy the plants are there, basically. Drone vegetation surveys, topography surveys, fish surveys. So we're getting this really wonderful picture of how these structures are affecting the ecosystem, especially in places like Nell said that maybe are degraded or not good enough habitat for beaver or a lot of our native wildlife.
Okay, so this guy that you're, this PhD candidate that you're working with, and this is his dissertation then?
Mm-hmm. Yep, so we just wrapped up actually our final year of field work just last week, so we've been doing that for 3 seasons. And so we have a lot of anecdotal evidence, kind of what we've been seeing and stuff that we've been able to piece together, and he'll sit down and work on that dissertation this fall. But so far we've seen some really promising results from more native fish, kind of changing fish populations, more juveniles, higher dissolved oxygen, which is good, lower temperature in the water, which is good. Those native fish like that cold water.
Yeah, and especially with just the lack of water coming into the stream, does that make these analogs more, even more important?
Definitely. This has been definitely a lifesaver, especially this summer when we had East Canyon Creek was down to 2 CFS cubic feet of water, and it's much higher now, but these structures can help hold water in the system, help the wetland be wet, provide all those ecological benefits that wetlands have, and provide habitat for things like fish and other animals that really need those pools when the water's low.
Yeah.
We call those pools like a, excuse me, like a deep water or a cold water refugia. So like when the stream is really low, like it got this summer, they can kind of find those little refuge areas and hang out there until the stream flow increases.
All right, so the Swanner was also a recipient of the Park City Community Foundation Climate Fund grant. How much did you get, and then how is that money being spent?
Yeah, we got almost $50,000, and we applied for that in conjunction with our fantastic partners at Wild Utah Project. And that funding is being spent to increase the scale of this Beaver Dam Analog project to something that's more watershed-wide. So we'll be installing 90 Beaver Dam analogs on the preserve, and then also here in town in the city, there's a piece of DWR property right in front and I guess to the south of the McPullen Barn, and we'll be working with those partners to install a few Beaver Dam analogs there, where folks can take a look at them, see them really easily, and we'll be doing some tours. But the reasoning for this sort of larger scale project with PCCF is focused on carbon sequestration, which hadn't been one of our initial goals for Beaver Dam analogs. But as we started to learn more about it, we realized this can be an efficient way to capture and store carbon. One of the ways that it does that is by re-wetting wetland soils so they can function and store an enormous amount of carbon. And then the other way is by sort of capturing sediment and keeping that in place in the stream.
Fascinating. So, Rhea, you got others that are helping you with this. Tell us about that.
Yeah, definitely. So, right now, posts are being installed for this project, and we will need a lot of volunteers. So, if you're listening out there and you're like, that sounds pretty fun, I want to get in the stream, maybe get my hands dirty. We have a ton of volunteer opportunities in September to help build these structures. We aren't quite as efficient as beavers, and we need a little bit more help. So you can go on our website, swannerecocenter.org, and see all of those opportunities from harvesting willows to building those. And we've got also other partners watershed-wide that are building these structures all over. So Basin Recreation and Wild Utah Project are building about 70 of these structures as well, so they have a bunch of volunteer opportunities. So there's a day for everybody to get out there and get involved.
Okay. You also got a film about beaver believers.
Yeah, we are really excited about this. This is actually tomorrow evening, August 26th, and right in front of the Eco Center in the New Park Amphitheater. And this is a really great film. Follows people who are beaver believers who are maybe reintroducing beavers or fighting for beavers in their community, even a hairdresser that relocates beavers. It's super entertaining. It's free. Registration is on our website, just so we can kind of keep track of how many people are coming and register you for the opportunity drawing. We've got awesome partners that will be tabling at the event, like Basin Rec and Trout Unlimited and Ecology Bridge and many more. So you can get there at 7 to visit our tabling partners and get a chance in the opportunity drawing, and the film is at 8.
Okay. Now, anything else you want to add?
You know, one thing I'll mention is that along with this work, we'll be offering some tours and some instructional opportunities for people that are interested in applying these techniques. So keep an eye out for that, or get on our email list if you're interested in hearing about it. And then we also anticipate having some more of these research projects, one of which we have already started in on with some biocontrols for non-native species. And so if people are interested, again, in learning more about that, they can contact us.
Okay. Now, Larson, Rhea Cohn, thanks.
Thanks for having us.
You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW.